Hey guys, Tim Fitzpatrick here, and you're listening to Hey, Can I Come Over? Each week, or as often as time allows, I will rudely invite myself over someone's house, insist they make me dinner to my particular diet specifications, and force them to answer as many personal questions as I can manage in an hour or so. We have a very special guest today. His name is Mike McManus. I've known Mike since 2005 or so. Our respective bands played gigs together for years and years and years. So Mike, I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Absolutely.
I'm happy to be here.
Cool. What have you been up to, dude? What's new? Since the last time I saw you, which is probably about 3 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I graduated college and I've just pretty much been working and working on music and trying to stay sane and trying to figure out my life. And
awesome. You're recording stuff now, right? As your job?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. Once in a while, I'm fortunate enough to have that be the case, but usually it's just me pursuing my own projects and trying to work as much as possible on my own music and collaborating with other people. And my day job is I'm a waiter/bartender at my family bar in Manhattan.
Alright, so what bands are you currently working with right now, or what projects are you working on right now?
So at the moment, the main project is my debut solo album as a hip-hop producer. So I produce hip-hop under the name Don Miguel.
Where does that name come from? Your name and...
It's a family nickname that I've had ever since I was born. My great-grandfather on my mother's side, actually, it was like the... We have it on video, too, on a home VHS. Of literally, I come home from the hospital. I was just born, and my mom takes me to my grandmother's house, and my great-grandfather, who died 2 years after I was born, the first thing he says is, Don Miguel. He had a very thick accent and didn't speak English all that well, and he was from Sicily.
Okay.
So
you're Italian and, I guess, at least part Irish, last name is McManus, right?
Yeah, my dad is Irish and my mom is Sicilian and Puerto Rican.
Gotcha. Alright. So back to Don Miguel.
Yeah.
You're producing an album.
Yeah, that's the main project right now. Is basically I've produced all the tracks, made all the beats. That's what we call them in hip-hop. And it basically means the instrumental. And then I have different rappers and singers on each track. So worked with over 25 different people on it so far. And it's by far my largest undertaking as a project. But so that's the main focus right now. Executive co-produced an album with my buddy Chris McGuire, who he's coming out with a rap album. He raps under the name Monsignor Ghost, and I produced about half the beats and just kind of been facilitating the recording process. So there's that. I also have about 6 months ago started working on a collaborative album with this rapper from the UK named Samuel, and basically we did about 5 months pre-production of me sending him music and him recording it in London, in West London where he lives. And then a few weeks ago he actually flew out to New York and stayed with me for 3 weeks.
That's awesome.
And we just worked on music every day and hung out, and I basically had a life partner for 3 weeks.
That's really
cool. Never spent that much time with another human being in my life. Not even a girlfriend. Like, it was hardcore.
All day.
I mean, I had a life partner, dude. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, the only time I didn't see this guy for 3 weeks was when, I mean, he came with me at work and, like, sat there with me. You know what I mean? Like, it was only when we were sleeping or going to the bathroom. I didn't see that.
But you were totally comfortable with that.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's kind of cool. Like, I didn't know that I could be around a person that much without, like, either wanting to kill them or myself. So mm-hmm. that was cool. Like, not necessarily that I thought I would, you know, but I didn't know him really at all. Like,
yeah,
only from the
internet. You hadn't met him personally before?
Never. Or? I hadn't even spoken to him on the phone until, like, a couple days before he flew out.
Oh, wow. Then how'd you meet him?
Yeah, just on the internet. He found my music online. From a track that I did with my friend ST, who's from a rap group G-Side, who they actually broke up. But I did a track with him, and they're pretty big in like underground hip hop or whatever. So he found me through that track that I did with the guy, and then he hit me up on SoundCloud and was like, I really like your stuff. I want to work with you, whatever. And I had just begun work on my solo album, which is going to be called Waiting for Carmine. And so I had this guy from England do a verse for me. But then what ended up happening was we just kind of stayed in touch. And I sent him a beat that I made that I heard him on. And he liked it and wrote to it, came out good. Then I kept sending him stuff, and then next thing we knew, we were like, wait a second, we have 15 tracks together. Fucking come fly across the country and, you know, we'll make an album together. So that's
awesome.
That, yeah. And then I have...
Stop, Mike, jeez.
Yeah. we're not really doing a whole bunch right now, but Helicopter Goes Kaboom is still alive and well.
Which is your project with?
Yeah,
is it just BD?
On the recording, our first album was me and BD just in my basement. The second album, we got more people to play on it. We got Nick Lee plays on it, Ray Marte. Both of those guys are from Moontooth. Ray Marte co-produced the album with us and did a fucking phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. It's called Vegas in the Basement, and please to anybody listening, like, check that out, because we worked on it for 3 years, and it's good, you know.
I can say
that because it's more than me responsible for that music. So.
Right, so you feel like you're less tooting your own horn.
I mean, no, I'm still tooting my own horn, but it's good. I mean, you know, it's like you gotta like what you're doing and shit.
Absolutely, oh yeah, definitely. Or else, you know, you'd feel weird putting it out to people.
Yeah. And then, sorry, just to wrap up.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then also, I'm playing bass, and I might get involved in the mixing a little bit too. A full-length album by BD, who, if you know BD, you know he comes out with a new release about every week. But what we did here was, this is his first full band album. So there's a drummer, who's John Hoblin's doing the drums,
cool.
And he's fucking destroying it. As he only knows how to do. I'm playing bass, BD's playing guitar, Will Forthman's playing synth and producing it, and he's doing a fucking fantastic job. This is Will Forthman's coming out party as a fucking musician.
That's awesome. He hasn't really done anything before.
Yeah, man, I mean, he's, you know, he's obviously loves music,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he's always been around music and been a facilitator of shows and whatnot, but he really has... He's gotten himself going with, like, knowing how to run Pro Tools, and he's fucking playing some really cool synth parts on it. Like, I can't even... I'd be the first one to be like, this fucking sucks, Will. You know? Like...
Because you've known him forever.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't... Maybe I don't know. Everybody picks on him a little bit, but, you know. But, no, man. Like, he's doing a fucking great job.
That's great. Awesome. For those who don't know BD, I know BD. I've interacted with him before. For the people who don't know him, give a general overview of, like, the character of BD.
Yes. So BD is I'm going to try to talk about this without saying anything that I don't know about. So I'm not a doctor or anything like that. BD's a different type of cat, you know? He's completely obsessed with music. He doesn't really... function all that well in society, because of, you know, just the way his, I don't know, brain is or whatever. Like, again, I don't know how to speak about this, so I don't want to, like, throw out a term. There is a term I could throw out, you know, he's even said to himself, you know, I've heard, he said that, you know, he's slightly autistic or, you know, I don't,
I wasn't really necessarily getting into that.
No. Yeah.
It's like, obviously, I've met him. He's a wacky guy. He's a fun, exciting guy to be around. Yeah. You never know what's next.
Yeah, he's a really fascinating human being. He's one of my favorite people in the world. And he's just a never-ending supply of energy and passion for music and creativity. The guy, that's all he does, man. Like, he just sits in his room and does music. He goes to college at Queensborough Community College, but, you know, he's been going for, like, a really long time. I don't know if he'll finish, but maybe at some point. But, you know, he's just, I don't know. I don't know how deep I should get. Like, I could really go in, you know what I mean? But I don't want to, like, speak where I shouldn't or whatever.
No, I completely understand.
But I love the guy to death. He's my brother. He's one of my best friends.
Yeah, and obviously you've been making music
years now.
Do you find it tough to just keep up with him because of how often he writes? Or?
I mean, we're different, you know. Like he doesn't really deliberate on things like I do. Like, he's just more of like, boom, like it's just flowing out of him at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, all he does, I mean, you know, like the best example is you'll bring him to a party and like he's sitting on the couch with his headphones on making music, you know what I mean, on his laptop. Or the last there was like a Rice Cultivation Society show at Centerville, and literally there's a band on stage playing and a room full of people. And Beatty's fucking sitting on the couch with his headphones on in the middle of the room where a concert's going on and fucking making music on his laptop.
Just when it comes, it's just, gotta
he's just,
come out.
That's right? Just him, man. Like, he's just, that's what he does. It's, it's, you know. Yeah. Shout out to Beatty.
Hell yeah. As far as just touching on Don Miguel before we move on.
Totally.
Any names in particular that maybe I would recognize, or just people like in the circle of musicians that we've worked with before that are on this?
Or
that you've worked with?
Yeah, well, I mean, Chris McGuire, Monsignor Ghost is his name. He's on the album. We haven't recorded it yet, but Nick Lee is gonna probably play some guitar. My buddy Steve is probably gonna help me out, with some guitar, maybe a little, keyboards or whatever.
And most of the other guys are just people that you've run into?
Most of the other guys are rappers that, that I've either met, through shows, or that I've just contacted myself through email and Twitter, and just kind of gone that way with it.
Just like, hey man, like, I really like your stuff, can we work together sometime?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Like, the world of hip-hop is, I actually find it far more, it's weird because I find it more inviting in a lot of ways than rock music, in the sense that it's way easier to work with a lot more people, and I think that's naturally because you can have a situation where you send somebody an email of music and they can record it at themselves, you know, at their house or whatever, and send it back to you. So it's definitely like, if I was trying to do a rock album and have like 25 different bands play on it, that would probably be impossible. But you know, with hip hop, just like Twitter and email, man, you know, and going out there to the shows and just, you know, working hard on my craft. And then also just realizing that, like, if I'm gonna fucking do anything, that I gotta put myself out there, man. And I can't be ashamed of doing it anymore. For years I was like, oh, you know, I'm an artist, you know. Like, the artist doesn't do that. It's dirty. It's, you don't, you know, and then, you know what, that's fine.
You feel like you're still,
that's fine, but you could have fun, like, in your room the rest of your life.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, And nothing against that. Like, that's totally cool. But I've, you know, I'm young enough where it's like, I'm just going for it. Like,
I made a decision
to fucking just not be ashamed of, like, putting myself out there. Because, you know, people are all right. You know what I mean? Like, it's not for the most part. Like, you can just be like, yo, what's up? I do this. You know, of course, like, it hasn't worked out with everybody I've tried to work with, but for the most part, like, I kind of sat there and wrote, like, a little fantasy list of, like, well, I'd really like to work with this rapper. Mm. If you told me a year ago or 2 years ago, I'd be like, oh my god, if I work with that rapper, like, I'm set, my career is, you know what I mean? And then, like, but it's, you know, people are people, dude. Mm. Like, if you're a nice person and you have good work, you know, like, and you approach it in a respectful manner, and you're just kind of, you know what I mean? Like, you could accomplish some pretty cool shit.
Definitely. Any hip-hop artists that you're listening to right now that are, like piquing your interest?
Totally. I mean, all the time. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone from the area, for example?
From the area?
Just in New York City and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, Mr. Motherfucking Esquire, who I've gotten an opportunity to, you know, be familiar with and friends with, and like his whole crew has been really inviting to me, and you know, like, I really like what he's doing a lot. I like, you know, Danny Brown, Kendrick, which are, you know, they're really popular, but, you know, for a reason, they're good. LP and Killer Mike, who just put out Run the Jewels, that album is sick. You know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. Like, even just my friends are making good music. My friend Grayscale, who's on the album. My friend Charmingly Ghetto from Boston, he's also on my album. He's doing a lot of great shit. There's a producer in North Carolina named Ninth Wonder. He's got a whole record label. I've actually had the chance to work with a couple of his artists, like, for my record, and, you know, like, they're just all really cool and, like, about music, and they work hard, you know, and like, I don't know, it just rubs off on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you want to, if these people are pushing themselves so much, it makes you want to do the exact same thing.
Right? Yeah, especially if it's somebody that you're like, wait a minute, like, I'm nowhere near where they are, and they're still fucking on Twitter all day. Just like, you know what I mean? Like, not that you want to be on Twitter all day. Like, nobody wants to be on Twitter all day, but you know what I mean? Like, if you see, like, somebody that you look up to and they're, like, working harder than you, it's like, wait a second. What's going on here? Right. Like, I need to step my shit up.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? For sure. Definitely. What's the end game here? Are you looking to be just a record, a hip-hop producer, or is just really anything at this point? Or?
I don't know. I don't ever know. Basically, the way that I would... The only way that I can do it now without, again, wanting to jump off a cliff or something is just take it project to project. Mm-hmm. And just try to be honest and present with each project. I've found that to be more rewarding than sitting and thinking, what's the next 5 years going to look like? What's the next 10 years going to look like? Which maybe I should do that more, but it freaks me out too much. And, you know, you can psych yourself out or just get distracted, and next thing you know... Put it this way, I'd much rather wake up and be like, I have this email to send today. I have this person to call today. I have this beat that I need to make for this project today. You know what I mean? Like, instead of waking up just like... How am I gonna make a career out of this? Like, I can't do that. You know what I mean? I'd be done making music already if I did that. I used to think like that, and it would scare the shit out of me. You know what? I can't. But I gotta figure something out soon. But I'm just
hey, getting pressure from mom. Or?
My parents are so cool, dude. Yeah. My parents are so fucking cool. It's kind of unfair. Like, of course. Like, it's more of they just, I don't know. Like, they want me to be happy, and they want me to be able to take care of myself, and they would like nothing more than for me to succeed doing with what I want to do. But
right.
Of course, at the end of the day, like, they're still just like, so, thinking about getting a real job? Just thinking about not being a fucking dirtbag? Like, not that they're saying that, but, like, in my mind, I'm like,
oh, no, they think I'm a dirtbag.
Yeah, but, like, you know, and also I could be kind of fucking stupid sometimes. Like, you know, just, you know, just get drunk and, like, fucking not come on. You know, just, like, dumb shit. You know, I live with my parents now since I'm out of college. So it's kind of hard to, like, you know, like, hide the fact if you're fucked up sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's, I don't know. But, for the most part, they're really supportive and really cool. And I think it's just, they see that I just don't give a fuck. That it's like, what are they gonna do? Like, they can't really, like, you know what I mean? I don't
hey,
know.
Hey, Mike, start giving a fuck.
Please. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when I say I don't give a fuck, it means, like, I'm just, of course I give a fuck. Like, I give a fuck about everything. Like, very much so. Like, and I love my family more than anything. And
obviously you love your craft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just, I don't know, man. I don't know what it is. It's like, you know, to drop a sports reference. It's like a ball, you know, like a ball player. Like, sometimes I feel like I'm, like, 35 and, like, in AAA, like, and, like, I was in the big leagues, like for a month, like, 4 years ago. And, like, you know,
right.
Like I get little shit like that where it's like, ooh, you feel like you're called up or something. And then you're working, and then I'm back working at the bar, and I'm, like, back in the minors or whatever.
Reality.
You know what I mean? And you just try to get up every day and play your game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You try. You go
get
to fun.
That call up.
Yeah. You go to the cage. You hit in the cage. You know. You go about your business. You try to, and then you know that's I don't know.
That's a good outlook, man.
You know?
I
look at it like that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a baseball player.
Now, obviously, you're a big baseball fan.
I am.
In general, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk baseball.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely. I was only using it as an analogy, because I really do think like that. Like, you know, it's kind of weird, but yeah.
What got you into hip-hop? Was it just, hey, I'm a fan of this stuff, I'm not that busy right now, let me see what I can do with it? Did you go to school for it, always wanting to do that, and playing in the bands, or did you think, like, hey, like, being in a band is really tough working with these three other people. Let me try to do something by myself and then occasionally have other people in there.
Right.
How did it happen?
Okay. Basically, I always loved hip-hop. I always loved rap music. The thing was, you know, you get to that point. I loved Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and Puff Daddy and Biggie in the 90s. Like, I remember when Biggie died. Like, I remember when Tupac died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I watched MTV every day as a kid. Like, I was, you know. And I really loved all that stuff. When Eminem came out, I loved it. I, you know, like, I made my parents take me to the store. They would get me the edited version.
Of course. They're responsible parents.
Right. Yeah. And then, like, when the Chronic 2001 came out, I loved it. You know, me and my friends would fucking listen to that shit all the time. And it was big. It was on TV all the time. I remember when my neighbor across the street, who was older than me, and he was a badass, and we would sit in his room, and he would smoke cigarettes, and, like, I remember when, like, Wu-Tang Forever came out, and, like, Old Dirty Bastard, and he would play all that shit. And then, like, around 8th grade or something like that, I was like, all the popular kids like rap. Like,
so
I can't,
that.
Fuck rap, you know, like, I can't listen to rap. Or, like, in my mind, I was like, I don't like rap. And, like, of course I still liked it, but, like, it was, like, it became a thing. It was like, well, like, the kids who wear Abercrombie and are on the football team like rap. And, like, 50
yourself.
Cent. So you separate yourself. So I'm like, I'm wearing band t-shirts, I'm skateboarding, I quit playing all sports, I grew my hair really long. And, like, I was like, rap is for fucking, you know what I mean? Like, popular kids or whatever. So, and then what happens is you get older and you realize that it doesn't fucking matter. You could listen to anything you want that makes you feel good and that you like and respect. So, I always liked it. So what got me into it is really...
Or I guess back into it, right?
Yeah, well... Yeah, musically, I just kind of like... I just got back into it because... When I really got back into it, like, I went to the record store by my house, and I bought a copy of The Score by the Fugees, which I might have had as a kid, but I got it again, and I fucking just was like, this is the best shit ever, and, like, I got super obsessed with the album, and then I think I just kind of, like, started listening to a lot of hip-hop again. But as far as, like, making it, like, when I did the first Helicopter album with Beatty, we both are really big supporters of a program called FL Studio, formerly known as Fruity Loops.
Okay.
So he downloaded Fruity Loops on my laptop so we can make our tracks for Helicopter. And totally, like, fucking virus version of it, like, destroyed my computer. I had to pay, like, $400 to get it. Like, but it was the best thing ever because after they cleaned up my computer... The program itself was still left on there. And I said to the guy in the store, like, oh, is the program, I could still use it? Or it's going to... He's like, yeah, it should be fine. You know? So, I just had it on my computer that, and Beatty would use it when he would come over. I didn't know how to use it at all. And what ended up happening was I lived in a dorm room in Manhattan because I was going to Hunter College in New York City. And I just was a fucking... total loner. Like, I didn't leave my room at all, like, ever. I would just go to school and, like, I would just get beers and fucking, like, play guitar in my room and shit and be on my laptop. And then, like, one night I was just, like, looking at the program and I opened it up and I was like, let me see if I can make a little beat, just, like, a little, just, like, whatever. And I made this, like, fucking horrible little, just, like, whatever it was. I could barely remember how it sounded. But I was like, fuck, man, like... I made a loop, like, I made, you know, and I put it on my iPod, and it was, like, 3 a.m, and I was, like, walking around outside the dorm, just like, yeah, man, like, it was, like, 6 seconds long, and I just kept, like, playing it back and playing it back, and, after that, dude, I just got obsessed with it, man, like, I just literally got obsessed with it. It was, like, I would just do my schoolwork or be at school and fucking just come home and... get some beers from the bodega and just be on that bitch all day and all night. And I put, dude, I was like doing it for like, I'm not joking, like I would spend like anywhere between like 4 to 7 hours on it a day, pretty much. Like, Of course there were days that I'm sure I wasn't on it, but like if you averaged it out, I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like a good 4 hours a day for like, probably two years. Like,
that's a 20-hour work week, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would take my laptop to school with me, and in between classes, be making beats on the Long Island Railroad, you know, just everywhere, like everywhere. I took that fucking computer everywhere, and I was making beats everywhere. Now I pretty much just make beats in my basement because, like, I've lost the, like, oh, I can make a beat. Oh. You know, so it's like now, like, my standards are really high and, like...
It's not exactly... Yeah. It's not passé anymore. Right. It's just you gotta tone it back a little bit because not everything is going to be fantastic.
Well, it's just like now I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that program like the back of my hand. So for me to get really excited about a beat, it's, like, a bit harder. Like, It still can happen like that. Like, I could just hit something real quick and be like, oh, shit, that's awesome. But... generally speaking, like, you know, it's like, I don't know, I guess it's like when you get high the first time, you get high, and then, like, you gotta keep getting higher, or whatever, I don't know. That was kind of a shitty analogy. But.
So you are vegan.
Yeah.
You like to cook.
Yeah.
I was vegan off and on for the past couple, I have probably seven or eight years.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stick with it because I love cheese.
Okay.
A, how long have you been vegan?
Mm-hmm.
And B, what made you decide to do it?
I've been vegan specifically since January of 2008. I've been a vegetarian. And I'm gonna, like, I loosely use the word vegetarian. I've been on the trajectory of vegan since about fifth grade. I stopped eating beef in fifth grade because I found out about mad cow disease, and I was a freak when I was a kid. I thought, I was gonna die. I used to think I had AIDS. They would talk about it. Yeah, I mean, it would be AIDS. I made the jump to AIDS real quickly.
Immediately.
So you're a vegan. AIDS. No, but what do you call it? So, let's leave the AIDS thing. We'll get back to that.
All right.
No, but I said, my teacher told the class about mad cow disease, and I remember, I guess it was 2000, 99, 2000, and it just freaked me out. I was like, I'm not gonna eat meat anymore. I'm not gonna eat beef. I'm not gonna drink milk, which I kept drinking milk, but I quit eating beef. Then, I quit eating. It was a gradual thing. It was an extremely gradual process. Beef was first. Pork, I stopped eating pork in probably seventh or eighth grade.
It's because someone was swine flu?
I don't know, man. I think I just wanted to be a vegetarian, and I don't really remember why, but I know that I did stop it gradually. And I stopped eating poultry around ninth grade, I want to say. And then stopped eating fish probably around the same time. And I still ate dairy until my first year in college. Yeah. And I stopped drinking milk and having eggs, and I was just having cheese until my first year of college. The pizza and Greek salads with feta cheese, that was the last to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
It is tough.
Especially when you're a college kid,
really,
you're on the go.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's an inconvenience a lot of times. It's an inconvenience that I'm used to, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's of course I can't eat anything here. That's how that goes. It's an inconvenience, but I don't really feel inconvenienced. But when about it, I know it is an inconvenience.
For anyone else, it would be an inconvenience, but it's life.
Yeah, I mean, it's been well over 5 years that I've had any dairy products intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, something sneaks in once in a while.
For once in a while, yeah.
But yeah,
I accidentally ate liver by accident because I thought my mom had made oatmeal cookies.
What?
And
where the hell is it?
I walked home. I came home from work. And I thought my mom had made oatmeal cookies, but it was a sheet out on the on top of the stove. Okay. She was on the phone, so I didn't get a chance to be like, "Hey, mom, you made oatmeal cookies. Can I have some?" So I grabbed a hunk out of the what I thought was the cookie thing.
Oh,
and I took a bite out of it, and I was like, "Oh, this is really bland." And at that point, she had gotten off the phone, and she's like, "No!" And what had happened was, I've already run over and spit it out and washed out my mouth. What happened was, my grandfather had made dog treats for my dog.
Oh,
and that's
it looked
what it
like
was.
Cookies?
Because there was oatmeal, in it, and it was made from liver and oatmeal and whatever else he made it from. So that was my one fuck up.
Wow.
Accidentally eating meat. It was awful.
Yeah,
it was terrible. But anyway, enough about me, right?
Yeah. that's crazy, man.
It's fucking disgusting.
When I was little, when I was younger, if I would accidentally eat meat, I remember one time I was still eating cheese, but I took a bite of pizza that had pepperoni in it, but
stuck
it
on the bottom,
in the bottom,
yeah.
And I fucking flipped out, and I started spitting it out and washing my mouth out. I was just I can't believe it. How could you tell me that? You didn't tell me that. Fuck. And now, honestly, now I would just be whatever, because it's really not a big fucking deal. I don't. It doesn't I'm not a crazy purist. Whatever. I don't even. The thing I tell people, honestly, I don't even. I consider myself a vegan, but I don't really wake up and identify as a vegan. It's just the way I eat.
It's a dietary habit, yeah.
Yeah, and not that I don't think it's important, and I certainly have some animal rights, sympathies and tendencies towards those types of views, but I don't, it's not a huge part of my life by any stretch. Mm-hmm. No.
I kind of want to get into your, the past bands that you were in, obviously, just to know a little bit more about how you got into music. What was Vision Through Sound your first band, or?
Actually, no. My first, alright, well, there was an unofficial band that I was in like, fourth grade.
Everyone has them, man. Yeah. Don't be embarrassed. Yeah. It's cool.
But I think we were a band for, like, one day, and it was, like, a sleepover that me and John Hoblin had.
Oh, so you've known him for...
I've known him for 16 years. Oh. Yeah.
I guess you got both. You guys went to school together? And
we did, yeah. We went to Birch Lane Elementary School together, and we were in third grade together for the first time, I think.
Were you guys playing instruments at that point, or just...
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've been playing drums since I'm, like, six.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and same with him. Mm-hmm. So, and we were both drummers, and I was sleeping over his house, and we were really into Matchbox 20.
Who wasn't back then?
Yeah, I mean, they were the jam, dude. So we were, like, listening to Yourself or Someone Like You, and then Green Day, and then we were like, we should be in a band. But we were both drummers, and he was like, but I need to be the drummer. And I was just like, all right, I guess I'll be
something else.
And then I think we had he was drumming on a drum pad, and I was doing something. I don't remember. And then that was it. But my first real band, like playing shows and stuff, was with a really good friend of mine by the name of Steve Gruber, who was a year older than me and lived around the block, and this was like seventh grade. We were both fucking crazy obsessed with Nirvana, and we just played Nirvana songs all day, and then started writing our own songs. Mm-hmm. And that was the first band that I played live with in like 2002.
Okay.
We actually have a recording from 2002.
Really?
Yeah, it's my first ever recording. It was called The Alien Song. And it was about, my friend Steve wrote it. It was about this teacher who was like a transvestite alien. And it was pretty good.
Sure, it was a classic, right?
It was. It was a classic.
So then Vision Through Sound came by eventually. How old were you when you joined them? And also, you weren't the first bassist, right?
Oh, no, I was not.
I just learned yesterday.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The first bassist was Chris Pearson, also known as Clark.
Okay.
But I was 15. 15.
You were that young?
Mm-hmm.
How old are you? You're 25 now, right?
23.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I'll be 24 right. In August. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so you joined them mm-hmm. when you were around 15.
Yeah.
And kind of stuck with them until...
Yeah, well, I was actually in Fastizio first, but that was like a year, and then I joined, they kind of like plucked me, but I still kept with Fastizio, obviously, but they wanted to kick out their bass player, and I was, I lived on the same block as the drummer, Mike Sarna, at mm-hmm. the time, and I thought they were like the coolest fucking people in the world. Like, I would like go to their band practices and be like, well, I can't believe like... I'm at their band practice. Like, Fran Berkman, like... You know, it's just funny because now, like, we're...
You guys are
tight. We've been such good friends for so long. But, like, back then, I was like, oh, my God. Like, mm-hmm. these motherfuckers are so cool. And then, like, they fucking wanted me to be in their band, which was the craziest shit ever. It was unreal. I would literally sit there. They had, like, this website... I still remember exactly what their website looked like, and like I would be on it and just be like, I would fucking kill a person to be the drummer. I wanted to be the drummer. I was a drummer. Mm-hmm. I didn't even play bass at all.
Oh, no?
I was a guitar player in Fastizio, and I just knew the drums from playing in different bands and like playing drums forever. Mm-hmm. So I never played the bass guitar whatsoever before they asked me to be their bass player. So, but I didn't realize that that's a fairly easy transition. It not is. That, no disrespect to bass players whatsoever, but like, cause I love playing the bass. Mm-hmm. The bass might be my favorite instrument to play, as a matter of fact.
I'd have to agree with you on that. And actually, it was kind of the same thing for me with joining Nothing Plural. Yeah. I had never touched bass before.
Right.
I was a guitarist and drummer in my last two bands. and they asked me to come and play guitar.
Right.
And I was like, all right, yeah, cool. And then they realized, like, ah, guitar probably isn't really fitting.
Right.
Do you have a bass? Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I guess I'll I guess I'll switch over to that. And actually, yeah, it wasn't that difficult of a transition.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's awesome to play. So they asked you to join. You jumped in. You're on Cloud Nine, presumably.
Yeah.
Because it's fucking Vision Through Sound.
Yeah.
You joined them. And you played with them for quite a while, right? Yeah.
We're talking about my first stint or just all together?
Oh, yeah, you played drums.
Yeah, I mean, I played in that band for the better part of 10 years, like about 8 years, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like with a brief hiatus when I quit the first time for about a year, like a year and a half, I was not in the band, maybe mm-hmm. 2 years, but I would still fill in here and there, like if the bass player couldn't make it. I would play a show here and there. Okay. Like, it wasn't like I quit and was like, never see you again. Like, I would fill in, and then I even filled in on drums one time. But, I played in that band forever.
And you guys toured and stuff. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did fucking probably, I don't know how many shows that band's played, but I've played a fucking whole lot. I mean, I don't even know. Like maybe 1,000 shows with them. I don't know. Like,
That's a lot, man.
I don't know how to really add it up.
Like 8 or so years. So.
I mean, a lot. No, I guess that's probably too high. But I played a shitload of shows with them as a bass player and a drummer.
Mm-hmm. Any fun tour stories? Anything that sticks out right now?
Yeah.
Fun or disastrous?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just about the experience, and, like, I remember some of the places we stayed in were just so fucking just shady and, like, funny. Like, one time we were playing in, like, outside of Pittsburgh, and we had, we were like, where are we gonna stay tonight? And the drummer called his dad, who had, like, a business partner in the area, and the business partner was like, you could stay at this address, blah, 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 and, like, we went, and it was, like, this weird abandoned building, and like we're staying in the basement, and it kind of looks like The Shining. Like there's just like endless hallways of weird shit, and we go downstairs and there's literally like fucking mannequin body parts sprayed everywhere.
Fuck that.
Yeah, and like Pittsburgh Steelers posters from like the 70s, and like beer bottles, like Budweiser beer bottles from fucking like 25 years ago. Like you're just like, where the fuck? You know, and like we're down there, and like there's literally fucking like mannequin heads and shit, and you're like, what the hell? And then like
for some reason this guy thought like, they might want to crash for the night here.
Yeah, I mean like yeah. This other time we were staying with this guy that we didn't even really know, who was just like, this was like in Dayton, Ohio, or some shit. He was like, yeah, I know a guy, you could stay with him. We roll up to the place at like 3 a.m. and he's like, hey, what's up? Hey, here's where you're gonna stay. And like he just opens up this like fucking weird shed type of situation, and we're going down into this shed, and it's like just a fucking lone mattress with like nothing.
One mattress
for like seven people. Yeah. So it's like, so Andrew and his girlfriend like stayed in the van or whatever, and like we all just fucking, like me and Jay Briggs slept on this weird ass mattress, and we just put like covered our bodies and like all of our clothes just so like no fucking weird shit would crawl on us or whatever. I mean, yeah, one time I was on tour with Festizio, and our fucking car broke down. Like we were in Ohio, it was the dead of January, and like our van broke down, and we were just, it was like we were in the middle of a field at like 3 a.m. and like there was no, we thought we were dead, you know, and like just like a cop came, and we're like, all right, this is where we get shot and raped by this like scary cop in the middle of a field. Like,
we've watched movies before.
Yeah, it was like, it looked like Jeepers Creepers or whatever. And then like another time we broke down on like the Jersey Turnpike, and that was terrible because we broke down on the middle of the road, and we had to like wait on the side of the road, and there's all this traffic, and we're sitting there with our sleeping bags and like looking like a bunch of fucking freaks. Like we all had long hair and beards and like just looking real raggedy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, these state troopers pull up to us and get out of the car, and they pull out the fucking foghorns, and they're just what are you doing? Like, just yelling at us and, like, got in our face and just like, what the fuck are you doing on the side of the road? Like, just, like, in our face. And we're, like, 18. Like, we're just, like, you know, like...
terrified?
Yeah. And it was, like... And then, like, we had New York licenses, and, like, that was an issue. And it's, like, we're in fucking Jersey, prick.
We're
like,
next door, guy. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I could go on, but, like...
Yeah, there are a lot of good experiences there, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I consider them good experiences. You know, looking back at it. But, like, yeah, of course. I mean, there's tons of good experiences.
And with Nothing Plural, our tour was... categorically a disaster. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. I think maybe our biggest show was the very last one in New Jersey when I had already, me and the piano player Gene had already made up our minds that we're probably going to quit the band.
Right.
I think it was like 15-20 people that had come, and we had to cancel two gigs because it was going to be it was going to be a loss regardless.
Right.
It was the hottest weekend. Up to Boston, down to... we were supposed to go up to Albany, but we canceled. Yeah. We played Wallingford, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to this house that Matt Rickard and Liz Rickard, their parents owned. But they didn't have air conditioning.
Oh, no.
So 100 degrees... Yeah. And one day everyone decided, like, hey, it might be a really good idea to go down to the pool. You know, we have access to it. And everyone went down. Everyone went and bought bathing suits. But the pool was closed for some reason. And so, like, everyone got ready. Everyone got super excited. And everyone came back. And they were like, oh, fuck.
Now we're just in bathing suits.
Yeah. Now we're just hanging out in bathing suits. But we're still sweating our asses off.
Right.
And we played Baltimore and we played Philly. And yeah, it was a disaster, complete disaster. But looking back on it, like that was a fucking ton of fun.
Of course.
You know, I drove around with my buddies, got to know them a lot better,
it's the best.
And you know, had a life experience. I went on tour.
Yeah,
you know, I haven't been on tour since then, so it might be my only time. So it was fucking great. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly look forward to a time where I'm back out on tour. Just what I've been involved with currently has kind of been more of like a working from home and New York in general type of things. You know, I went to Boston to work with some rappers. I went to upstate to this like recording project last summer, but like, yeah, I don't really do a whole bunch of touring anymore because I'm not really performing live that much, you know, but
What was the reason for leaving first Vision Through Sound?
The first time at that time, and looking back on it, like we were a pretty professional acting group of young men, like Andrew and Fran together. And our drummer, Mike Sarna, like, they were extraordinarily just together and on top of everything. And, like, it functioned like not a business, per se, but it was a very serious thing. I mean, we practiced. There was one summer we literally practiced every day, like, a couple times a day, even sometimes. The recording situations were... You know, we went to a studio, and it was, like, very... Everything felt like, holy shit, like, you know, like, we're on the precipice of doing some awesome shit. I mean, there was a time where, like, it probably doesn't sound like a lot to a lot of people, but, like, there was a time where, like, 90 to 100 people would show up to see BTS play.
Yeah.
Easily.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. Yeah.
That's impressive now, absolutely.
Sure. I'd fucking be like, whoa, well, that's awesome, you know? but, and we would tour, we would do big shows. It really seemed like we were going somewhere. Well, we got a write up in Newsday. Newsday reviewed our album "Cheer Up, Chap." Middle School Isn't Everything in 2006, and I'll never forget. Like, you opened up the back page of Newsday or the music section or whatever, and there was like a big spread on Kanye,
And there's you guys.
And BTS. There was one, I swear, it was like, the page was like Kanye and BTS. And it was like right around the time of my birthday, and it said in the article, and I still have it, obviously, we saved it. It says like, the oldest member is Fran Berkman, 21, and the youngest member, Michael McManus, turns 17 later this week or something like that. And I'm like, looking back, like, that's fucking pretty crazy, you know? Yeah. Like, I kind of didn't realize, like, that was cool or whatever. I mean, it was cool, but I don't know. But, yeah, as time went on, I don't know. Like, I think it wasn't always, like, that much fun because Mike Sarna and the drummer and Andrew and the guitar player, they were always like kind of, they were butting heads a lot about, you know, like the drummer and the rest of the band really weren't on the same page musically. The drummer who he's a fucking great guy. He's a good friend of mine, Mike Sarna. Like he plays in the band, Midnight Mob now, but he's always been very much more of like a classic rock, like heavy rock and roller type of guy, and I think there was just differences there, and it wasn't much of a fun environment anymore. There was a decent amount of fighting, mm-hmm. you know, never physical, I don't think. Like a couple.
I couldn't see any of you guys get into a fist fight, to be honest with you.
Never a fist fight. There was definitely some like escalated situations at times, and also I had my band Festizio that I just was in love with, and I was like, it was always so much fun, mm-hmm. and like, I think part of me was like, I should really do my own thing and be the singer and the songwriter of my band and the bass player of someone else's band, even though they wanted nothing more than for me to make VCS my band, yes, that there was nothing more that would have made them happier, and, you know, like, God bless Andrew, like, to this day, there's still that, like, mm-hmm. even when I recently quit the band again after my second tour of duty, if you will, you know, it's unfortunate, like, I love the guy to death. There's few people in this world I respect more than him, honestly. I'm not just saying that, like, there's a lot to fucking be, respected in him, and, but, I mean, it's just, you know how it is with music. Like, you can't control certain things that you're absolutely passionate about or you feel, and,
And you love Festies, yeah?
Yeah, and, so at the time, it was just, but I didn't really ever, like, straight up quit the band. Like, it was more of, like, they just kind of recognized that I was phasing out. Mm-hmm. And they would come to me and, like, be like, dude, what's the deal? Like, are you phasing out, or like, you don't want to do this, or whatever. And I think I was just afraid of the confrontation, or I didn't really know exactly what to do, which is a big problem of mine. I recently went through something as a result of similar, not dealing with shit, but
okay.
Sorry, I'm rambling, but
no, dude, that's what you're here for.
I guess so, yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, it was just, like, I think it got to the point they were just, like, well, what's going on? Like, you know, you're showing up. You're the last to show up and the first to leave. I remember Fran saying that to me, and which was true. I couldn't wait to get the fuck out of there mm-hmm. a lot of times, you know, unfortunately. And I guess they kind of forced me into saying, like, well, I guess I'm thinking about just doing Festizio or whatever. And right. That's kind of how it happened. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you moved on to Festizio full-time.
Right.
Although Festizio was still, you know, a serious yeah. project for you right. anyway.
Yes.
But
yeah.
You had plenty of time. And was it around that time that you released the album? Or
yeah. Yeah, so the Underage Blood Crusade came out in November 2007. And then I continued to do both Festizio and Vision Through Sound until Vision Through Sound came out with the album The History of the Damnable Life and Deserved Death of Vision Through Sound, which was 2008. And then it was kind of decided that when that album, the 2008 VTS album, came out, we were going to do the release show for it, and that was going to be the last time that myself and the drummer, Mike Sarna, was going to leave the band. So we actually left the band at the same time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who came in on drums? Hugo Lopez.
I believe he was around for a little bit.
He was. He did a couple of stints. Yeah.
Okay. And so Festuzio is your main project, or was your main project at that point.
Right.
I was always kind of interested in, because that Festuzio is probably one of my favorite local bands.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Absolutely love you guys. It was always a pleasure playing with you guys. There weren't a lot of bands that were playing in that group that had the hard sound that I was always drawn to.
Yeah.
And it was always a breath of fresh air.
Thanks, man.
What were you guys listening to, and what really inspired the writing of Festuzio?
I mean, yeah, man. Like, that band was just all, like, we didn't give two shits, man. Like, we didn't give a fuck. Like, if you listen to the Underage Blood Crusade, like, it's, you know, and it's kind of like, it comes out with Helicopter definitely too, but like, you know, there's just hard-hitting shit, there's weird shit, there's poppy shit, you know. That's just kind of how I do things, mm-hmm. I think. I just...
You never want to have one particular go-to sound.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not even intentional. It's just kind of the way it comes out. Like, but Festuzio, yeah. Me and John Hoblin, one of my best friends, we were, and still are, like, I don't have a connection with anybody like I do with him as far as music goes. As far as, a physical, like, when we play with each other, it's like, we're just, like, two fucking pigs and shit. Like, we're just, like, we're laughing, we make each other laugh with how we play, we both fucking respect the fuck out of each other. Like, he's said to me, he's like, I've never played with anybody that makes me feel like you do about shit, and I feel the same way about him, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of talented friends, that's not a knock on anybody, and, like, I love the shit out of all my friends, Ray, Nikki, I mean, you know, like, there's so many, Tom Moran, like, there's so many people I have such a good connection with, but me and John Hoblin were pretty much, like, brothers at one point, and Matt Martello, too, the bass player, like, he's a fucking phenomenal bass player. But it was a lot of, like, you know, not to, like, name drop, because I might, like, leave some bands out or whatever, but, you know, like, Queens of the Stone Age, Chili Peppers, Mars Volta were huge, mm-hmm.
Mars Volta, actually, yeah. That was one of the ones that I had picked out, like, hey,
Oh, no. They were, like, our favorite band, pretty mm-hmm. much, at one point. Huge Frank Zappa influence. Then, like, Michael Jackson, we were really into Michael Jackson. John Alban loves, like, James Brown and fucking, you know, like, Bob Marley was an influence. I mean, like...
Really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Bob Marley was the first album I ever listened to.
Really? Interesting.
Bob Marley's the first musician I was ever aware of.
Because of something that your parents had played for you?
Yeah. My dad had a copy of Legend, which I think is, like, a greatest hits collection mm-hmm. or whatever, and, yeah, my dad tells me all the time, like, well, not all the time, but, like, he, you know, before I even was, like, speaking all that much, like, he would play that album in the car, and apparently I would always ask for him to play Buffalo Soldier. Like, it was my favorite song.
Yeah.
Yeah, before I knew what music was, really. Like, I credit Bob Marley and the Red Hot Chili Peppers with getting me into music.
Interesting. It's an interesting mix.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, especially on Long Island, and I'll get to that, say it's Bob Marley. The reason why I say it's especially on Long Island, because my first artist that I listened to was Billy Joel.
Okay.
That was the first guy I was aware of. Billy Joel and the Beatles, like, immediately after that. Those are the two artists that my parents were really into.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a lot of people that I talked to, it was Billy Joel, like... Or the Beatles, almost entirely across the board. Maybe the Rolling Stones here and there, if your parents were Stones people. But you do basically get it from your parents. But yours was Bob Marley, because your parents or dad was big into Bob Marley.
Yeah, well, like, it's weird, man. Like, my parents love music, but they're not, like, big music people by any stretch. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't really listen to music, like, intentionally. Like, I think... No, my dad does.
Accidentally.
My dad does. Like, oh, shit, I'm listening to music. What whoops. The fuck? I hate when that happens. No, that's definitely not true. But, like, my dad likes... My dad listens to music when he's, like, running on the treadmill or, like... I think he does. Like, my dad definitely does listen to music. He's just not very vocal about it, and he certainly never showed me any music at all. Mm-hmm. Never. Like, neither did my mom. Like, I have my, like, Fleetwood Mac is one of my favorite bands of all time. It's because just my mom, it's, like, my mom's favorite band. Mm-hmm. So, I would just... But she never was like, hey, here's Fleetwood Mac. Like, my dad never sat me down and, like, played music for me.
Right.
Like, it just was like... I just kind of, yeah. But, like, there was, like, a, there was a room in my house growing up where it was, like, they kept all the music and all the booze. So, it was, like, the fucking, the Mike's room. But they didn't, like, it was, like, my room in waiting. No. But, like, no, but I fucking, I remember there was a Beavis and Butthead episode in, like, the mid-90s with the Chili Peppers on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember, like, Dave Navarro was in the band at the time. And I saw it on TV, and I knew where my parents kept the music, and I was just like, oh, like, they'll have the Chili Peppers, because that's just how it works. Like, all, every music,
music
ever
there.
Was there. That's where music is. So, and I went in, and fucking my dad had an unopened copy of Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
Really?
And I was like, now thinking about it, I'm like, dude, that's fucked up. And the reason was, like, he liked the song Under the Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, like, if you liked a song from an artist, you went
bought
to fucking Tower Records and bought the CD.
How else were you going to listen to it? Yeah, unless you randomly caught it on the radio. Yeah.
And I always say that, like, that just goes to show how popular Under the Bridge must have been to motivate my dad to go out and buy a Chili Peppers album.
Yeah. Well, and again, it was, well, that was a little before I was aware of popular music.
Right.
That was probably right around when I was getting into
mm-hmm.
popular music.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't really grasp the gravity of that particular album in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, because that album is fucking weird as fuck, and it's amazing, and
mm-hmm.
it, like, changed my life to the fucking nth degree. Like, I owe everything to that album. That's why they're always gonna be my favorite. Even if I'm not listening to them today, they're always my favorite band.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is taking the Chili Peppers from the number one spot ever. Like, yeah, man. I mean, like, I love that album so much. You know.
As far as actually discuss the breakup of Festizia, because you did say that you and Johnny were best friends.
Yes.
And what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, basically what happened was, and it's unfortunate, but it was, I dated a girl for, who is one of my best friends, like, forever will be. Like, she means the world to me. Like, I love her to the day I die, I love her family, you know, just forever. But, so we dated in high school from, about 2 years, little under 2 years, the first time. Like, we've had a few little...
It's been off and on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, pretty much, we never officially dated again after that, but, like, you know, we've been through situations and shit together.
Say no more, man.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Actually, it was the last time that Festizia was on tour that we were kind of, like, breaking up while we were on the tour. We were fighting on the phone every day, and I remember we were in, like, I forget where we were, like, maybe Chicago or something, and she called me up, and she was wasted, and she was like, oh, I'm gonna drive my car home or whatever, and I was just like, no, you're not, like, you're fucking drunk. And I called her mom, and I was like, she thinks she's gonna drive home, and... I'm just letting you know, like, she's fucking wasted. And I don't know what happened, but anyway, as soon as we got back, like, I went over there, and it was like, we broke up. So then, like, later on in that year, like, probably 7 or 6 or 7 or 8 months had passed or whatever, and, you know, I kind of noticed that they were hanging out, like, and it was like, all right, like, they would kind of show up to places together. And I was just like, it's kind of weird. And then he came over and basically, you know, told me that he had feelings for her and kind of thought that it was, you know, the same on her part, and basically asked my permission, or just kind of was letting me know the situation. Yeah, right. And he was just like, yeah, he was just, you know, what was I going to do? There's nothing I going to do. Nothing I could do. You know, people are going to do what they're going to do. So I just tried to make the best of the situation, and I continued on with the band. I didn't want to break up my band. Like, I was like, maybe I should be the, like, the, you know, fuck you. Like, yeah. But I was like, okay. Like, I don't really, I mean, obviously that's not cool and shit, and, like, you know, to a degree, our friendship's never really been the same since, but I mean, it's so much better now. I love the guy. It's never, there was like years after that where, as whenever we were around each other, like, that was the fucking elephant in the room, and there's no elephant anymore, like, at all. Like, it's totally fine. So, basically, they dated for about a year. And then, those damn Yankees, man. The fucking 2009, World Series, like, so me
how are you tying this in?
Tying it in. Hard, like, I'm really tying it in. Like, so, the girl, we ended up going to the same college together. Like, she transferred to the college I was going to. And, so, like, we would, you know, have lunch here and there, and, like, just, hey, what's up, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, it actually got to a point where it was, like, kind of fine that she was dating him. Like, I didn't even really give a shit that much anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was around, like, the World Series time, and it was the last game. It was, like, the Pedro Martinez, the fucking, you know, Hideki Matsui with the fucking 7 RBIs or whatever.
Yep.
And, so, like, I was going to the bar, my family's bar, to watch the game. And I was just like, oh, you want to come watch the World Series, have a couple of beers? And, you know, we ended up getting really drunk and celebrating really hard, and then she stayed with me.
Oh.
And, you know, we were really drunk. She stayed with me.
That's fair.
You know?
And so...
and then, yeah, it was like, I had never been through anything like that. I didn't know how to deal with that at all. It was like, kind of fucked up, you know? Like, I was like... You know, but, you know, we told him what had happened, and we had no intention of being together at all. Like,
that was just a night.
It was the worst thing ever. Like, it took me years to get over that. Like, I hated myself. Like, it was the darkest time ever, and I lost my band because of it. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really a bad time. Really bad. Yeah. I'm glad that's in the past.
So, and obviously, you know, you have a good relationship with both.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. And she has an incredible boyfriend now that he's fucking awesome. Like, he's a good friend of mine, too, so.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's all good. Cool. It's all good. Yeah.
So, perfect transition.
Sure.
Big baseball fan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I guess you got it from your dad, or?
Oh, my dad's not, like, a crazy, my dad's a huge Knicks fan. Mm-hmm. My dad roots for the Yankees. My mom is the psycho Yankee fan. Oh, but from being born until 7-ish, like, I wouldn't say I was a Mets fan, but I went to Shea Stadium all the time. Like, mm-hmm. Because my dad didn't give a shit really about sports. Like, just. He gave enough of a shit of, like, oh, I should take my son to a ball game every once in a while, because that's, like, because we're in America, like, you know what I mean? Like, so, like, but of course, like, I grew up on Long Island, so you go to Shea Stadium, you don't go to the Bronx, like, this,
right.
Especially if you don't really give a shit, like,
you go to Shea, so,
and also, like, the Mets were more popular when we were little.
Oh, yeah.
By far. Definitely. I mean, it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I was too, I was, like, there's pictures of me in Mets gear. Like, which I don't let anybody see, but like, yeah, it would take me to Shea and stuff like that. And then, I became a Yankee fan because my cousin, who's 8 years older than me, who I'm very close with, he came to live with us for a couple of summers while he was on break from he got out of high school, and then like he stayed the summer, then he would go to college and come back and stay with us in the summer. And he was a diehard Yankee fan, and I was still little. Like, there's a big age difference between us. Now it's not a big age difference, but, like, back then it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he was, like, my older brother that I never had. And the whole family got into the Yankees hardcore because of that. And, it was something to do. And he actually, years later, I don't know if you're... You probably don't remember this as not a Yankee fan, but they had a show on the Yes Network called The Ultimate Road Trip.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, they got all these crazy Yankee fans together, and they would make them there was like contests or competitions between them, and like whoever won got to go to the game, and like they basically went to every game for the 2007 season, and like they would travel with the team. Like
familiar, but continue. Yeah. Yeah,
my cousin was on that show. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah, because he submitted a video and like they selected him because it was supposed to be like prove you're the biggest fan type of thing. Mm-hmm. And like my cousin's like a psycho, and like, you know, He got on the show. But
did you play in like junior high, high school, or anything like that?
I played up until junior high, because around the same time, like talking about when I stopped listening to rap, I was just like, I can't play sports. Like, I quit all sports. And I was just like, I'm smoking cigarettes, even though I don't know how to smoke, and just like puff it out.
Put it in your mouth.
I'm like, yeah, and like and skateboard. So I stopped all the sports. But I wish I fucking continued. So bad.
I know. I personally get that regret a little bit too, because I tried out for high school, didn't make the high school team, didn't really want to make the high school team, so I didn't try.
Right.
And I'd kind of quit baseball for a couple of years until I started doing it again like 4 years ago.
Right.
And I so desperately regret, like, I should have just stuck with it, man. And just like, and also learn how to throw a circle changeup. Because if I learn how to throw a circle changeup...
Are you a lefty?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I
know.
You would have a job right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Big looping curveball and a circle change. I would have been set.
Yeah.
I still throw only 75, but still.
It's pitching, not throwing, as they say.
Fair enough. What next? Anything else that you wanted to touch on, Mike? Anything that I didn't bring up? That anything else that you're up to these days? Or,
I mean, nothing in particular. Just I don't know. I don't know where I'm going in life at all.
But you're going,
I guess.
For sure. You're doing shit. So
I'm trying to.
It's a start.
I get really down sometimes when I worry about shit, but what are you gonna do, you know? I don't have a life that's like a... I come from like more than comfortable upbringing, and I don't know, I guess I can't imagine how I'm gonna make money at all, so it's kind of like... But I'm like, I'm stubborn, and I believe in myself enough that I'm like, well, I'm not fucking done like doing music and doing shit I want to do. So I like battle myself over it sometimes, because I don't know whether I'm like somebody to be respected. Like, oh, look at this guy, like he just does what he wants to do, and like this and that, and like he's not that I'm like fearless, but like I delve into shit. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to like go for something, you know. But then I'm like, but am I just? Is that just like childish? And I'm trying to like avoid real responsibility, and like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, sometimes I feel both ways, and sometimes I'm like, of course that's not how it is. Like this and that, and then I have like cousins that are like married and like becoming doctors and like it's just, I don't fucking know, man.
It's
like,
tough to it's tough to compare to that. Having the successful cousins, I'm not even necessarily jealous at all.
I'm just like, is this, what am I doing? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm doing, man, at all.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, you're surrounded by people that think that you have the talent to be able to pull something off. So, well,
thank you so much.
We got your back.
Thank you very much.
I have two more questions before we wrap it up, and they're kind of questions that have been given to me by listeners that they think that I should throw it out to all of my guests. Mm. The first one being, what's in your trunk?
The trunk of what?
Your car.
My car. A tire. And some jumper cables.
That's it? You don't carry stuff around in your trunk, or?
No, that's it.
Oh, that was exciting.
Yeah.
The fuck, Mike Goldens. Second one is favorite album of all time. Can you name one?
Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
All right. That's all I got for you, man. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you, man. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Glad you had a good time.
Thank you for making me feel like I'm somewhat of a person that should be talking into a microphone.
You deserve it. Yeah, definitely.
Thanks,
buddy. If people want to follow you, give us all your social media stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Facebook, just Michael McManus. There's a whole gang of Michael McManuses, but, you know, find somebody that... You know, I'm sure.
Looks like
if you're listening to this, then like you probably know somebody who knows me or whatever. So you could, my email for music is Don Miguel Tracks with an X, so it's TRAX@gmail.com for any musical inquiries. You can check me out on Twitter. At Don Miguel Tracks, again with an X. These are my, my hip hop stuff. Check out Helicopter Goes Kaboom. We're on Bandcamp. Please check out our music. If you want to hear my old band, Festizio, you could check us out on Bandcamp. Vision Through Sound, which is known as Yankee Longstraw now. We put out an album in December. You could check that out. I don't know. Yeah, get in touch, man.
Awesome. Mike, thank you very much
for
being on the podcast.
Thank you. It was an absolute pleasure, man. I really appreciate it.
Cool. All right, guys. That was my interview with Mike McManus. I had an awesome time. Again, he listed all the social media stuff. Hit rewind if you want to hear all of them, because there's way too many for me to list right now. I will be back next week. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.